There are certain memories in life that plough deep into the mind, cutting far beyond consciousness and subconsciousness. Memories that physically dissolve into your heart and soul, that grow in mass with each passing year. These are the memories of war. Such are the memories of war. Within a year of meeting Anna, Jim Savage had proposed and had the wedding of his dreams. Not a lavish affair, but an occasion that was surely blessed by heaven. The little village pub rang out with singing voices and music well into the early hours. But nobody minded, for nobody had been left out. Neighbours bonded with neighbours. This bond was emotionally fused again when Jim and seven of the young farming lads became brothers in arms to join the 50,000 already in the trenches. Anna was 6 months pregnant when her Jimmy left for war, but she knew no matter what he would return, for she had faith in angels.
Angels are always with us. And whether or not you allow yourself to believe, loved ones are never far away. For every thought and memory that enters your head, your heart will hear. And it is within the heart where the angels receive messages and our loved ones live. They never leave you and never will.
The days were long and empty for most of the young women in the valley, each coming to terms with their individual losses. Anna would find comfort most evenings rereading Jim's letters. That way, her nights weren't spent alone.
Oh, Jim, I sense you're here with me. Looking at your photo, I can feel your spirit. My very own guardian angel, Corporal 798483 Jim Savage. Darling, I don't cry so much now, but I still feel so very empty. I miss you dreadfully. I feel your arms sometimes. I feel them most of the time. They said you were killed outright, and I pray every day you were. Oh, such a waste of lives. What a pointless way to take you. Let's hope to God that we learn something from that ghastly war. Let's hope to God. You wrote such beautiful letters, Jim. Your words transport me to the trenches every time I read them. I swear I hear your voice. My beloved Anna, today has been another wet and dismal day, with torrential rain making our conditions very difficult. The mud is now several inches deep. You cannot imagine just how the thought of you...
What you call a fish with no eyes?
Where the hell do you get these jokes from, George?
Shut up, Samuel. What you call a fish with no eyes?
Go on. What?
Bugger! That were too close for comfort.
Jeez, where the hell did that come from?
Can anyone see anything?
Nah, not a thing.
Everyone all right?
Yes, Sarge, we're all fine.
They've started oily, haven't they?
Probably can't sleep, Mickey.
Well, I know the bloody feeling.
Oh, Harry, kill the tears, will you? Still breathing, aren't we?
You all right, Harry?
Yeah, I'm fine now, really. Just cold.
You know, Harry, it's just the fear of the unknown that's getting to you. But the thing with the unknown is, we're yet to find out if it makes any bloody difference anyway. I mean, we've all become different people, haven't we? We're all suffering now from madness and illusion. It's just trying to accept things that you need to do. Here, you're shivering. I can manage without me coat. Come on. Turn around, let's put it on. We'll have it back later. Any better?
Cheers, Mickey. Mickey?
Yeah?
You're a good sort, you know. You're a good friend. I won't ever forget this.
Ah, Harry, all of this is going to be bloody hard to forget.
Still all right over there?
Yes, Sarge, we're all fine.
Savage and O'Reilly, take watch at the bank. I've got four gone down here. I'll sort out cover when I can.
Right, Sarge.
Ah, the good times just keep rolling, don't they? Keep hold of the coat, Harry. I'll have it back later.
Thanks, Mickey.
Jeez, Harry's in a bad way back there. If Jerry doesn't get him, his nerves will.
That might be cold blessing, perhaps.
Aye, that's true enough. It's a bloody lonely graveyard out there. And by Christ, Jim, it's freezing.
It's the mud that gets to me, Mickey. The mud and the stench. You soft Irish bugger. You look frozen. Here, have this scarf. Wish you'd not been Harry's comfort saver now, aren't we?
Oh, you're all heart, but thank you. I just like looking out for him. I reckon I'm not far off the edge myself.
We all are, Mickey. I reckon you'll be okay, though. The good Lord doesn't like taking gentle souls if he can help it.
Oh, this scarf's good. You all right, though?
Yeah, I'm fine. Anyway, it's a swap for your rum ration.
What? Bugger off. I'll keep it, though, just to show that I'm not the ungrateful kind. Jeez, Jim. Now what are you doing? Why are you kissing the ground?
I'm not kissing the bloody ground. I'm trying to listen. Can you hear anything, too?
No. What like? Can you, then?
They couldn't be digging under us, could they?
No, it can't be anything. This place plays tricks on the brain. You hear things that aren't there. And yet, the silence can be frightening.
Yeah, you're right. I thought I'd heard the dawn chorus yesterday, but you never see any birds in this hellhole.
Jim, I reckon they wouldn't have much to sing about if there were. Unless the heavens want to sing the dead on board.
It won't be long before we go over, you know. I know you might think it sounds pathetic, but I keep saying a final prayer every night. Not that I'm over-religious, but a final prayer gives a bit of comfort somehow to prepare for the final moment.
What's the same one?
What?
The same prayer? Do you say the same thing every night? 'Cause surely, unless he's deaf, I reckon the God-man must be getting a bit bored by now if you do. He might listen to everyone's different prayers and only answer the ones that he thinks are the most original and worthy. He might rate them 1 to 10. Or he might just put them all in a hat and pull out the odd one now and again. One for Fritz and one for us.
You don't have a faith, then?
Only in the power of rum. The fact is, you're either born lucky or unlucky. And you die lucky or unlucky.
And the way you live means nothing. There's not a destiny for each of us. You have no belief in another life after this, a better life than this.
Oh, aye. How you live means everything. And right here and now, this ain't living. My destiny lies in the hands of the bastards out there. And some master brain in London. You can keep your guard, and let's hope he comes good for you.
When this lot's over, this will seem like a distant nightmare.
When this lot's over, the nightmare will just start to begin.
The days were arduous, and the nights a lonely existence. If the dream of heroic endeavours hadn't already been shattered on their arrival, then it surely was after witnessing the first corpse. The trenches had developed to their own disgusting odour that clogged the noses and brains of everyone. A heady mixture of sweat, blood and bodily discharge. Amongst all this wretchedness, Jim devoted time each day to write to his beloved Anna. It was this escapism that gave him the hope that he desperately needed. As his pen scribbled on the page, he would let his mind take him to her side again, to listen as she read out his words.
I fill my empty hours just thinking about you and our baby, and it is these thoughts that are keeping me sane. It gets so hard at times to reach to the positive, to lift one's spirit, and I fear that some of the men could be losing a far greater war within themselves as the blanketed depression envelops them. You will never know just how much you have become my saviour. I am now growing used to the suffocating stench of the trench, to the howls of suffering that pierce through the air. I see many wait like wounded animals to be rescued. Alas, I see all too much the scars and wounds created by this war, and I fear there will be little or no relief for some. I will be home soon, my darling, so stay strong, and I carry you always in my heart. Your ever-loving husband, Jimmy.
Right, lads. Savage, go and collect the latest report. O'Reilly, you still okay to keep watch?
Yes, Sarge.
Good. Miller, go and collect some rainwater from the cans. Curtis and Ricketts, bring back the post, tea, rum rations. Oh, and any spare blankets going. And come straight back.
Yes, Sarge. Yes, Sarge.
Is everything all right, O'Reilly?
Yes, Sarge. Fine, Sarge, thank you.
The others all right?
Yes, Sarge. A bit cold and tired, but other than that, they're okay, Sarge. His arm seemed better the last time I looked, so he'll be all right.
Was the medic busy?
We manage, Sarge. We look after each other when we can. We have a good bunch. Oh, speak of the devil.
Latest report, Sarge.
Right.
Sarge?
Not now, Mickey. He's reading. It's not looking good.
Sergeant Jeffers felt physically sick as each report landed in his hands. He wanted so much for his boys to get the good news that the war had ended. They could go home. But instead he held the heavy burden in his heart that he could soon be announcing their death warrant. Unwittingly, he would scan across each of their faces at times when they were lost in their fantasy freedom, reading letters from loved ones. Unwittingly, he would watch, and consciously, he would fight the tears back.
Is there any news, Sarge? Do you reckon it'll be all over soon?
Aye, it'll be over soon. One way or another.
Receiving mail from home often had a tranquilizing effect. A little mental break that allowed for hope to return once more. Although no one had ever made reference to it, everyone noticed that Mickey was always the one who cut a lonely figure during such times. Who played with his cigarette instead of reading any letter. Back home, all the girls loved Mickey, his wit, his flirtatious charm. But to fall in love with him would have been lethal and guaranteed heartbreak, whether or not he returned. And so, that's how it was. Each time the mail was handed out, Mickey would stand lonesome. It was Sam who eventually broke the silence.
Sarge, I've got this letter from my dad.
Yes, Curtis, and?
Do you ever feel guilty that killing is right, Sarge?
Go on.
My dad's gone all sensitive-like. He's saying that this war isn't right. All this killing, it's all wrong. He's written about forgiveness and compassion. Reckons the Germans out there don't want this war any more than we do. They've also got families, homes, children, life's back home. It's all madness. He's right, isn't he, Sarge? It's all madness, all of this.
You bastard!
Hey, whoa, Harry, no!
Curtis, don't talk so bloody pathetic. We're here to do a job for bloody victory.
Wipe the bastards away. They've killed thousands. Thousands. Including even my own brother. I don't want to be here. None of us wants to be here. So don't talk about bloody compassion.
Fair enough, Harry. Come on, sit down.
It's all one big bloody mess.
Shall I tell you why we're here doing this? We're here because we're all in the wrong place at the wrong time. If we'd been born another decade, who knows? But, Samuel, let me tell you something. Your dad is a good man. A respected village padre. The right man to hold the hand of the dying. Promise salvation, comfort widows, mop the brow of the wounded. Probably doing a lot of that. But his message isn't necessarily wanted here right now, lad. His Christian philosophy is not needed here. Not when we need hatred in our bellies to kill those bastards. Bastards that'll happily kill you and laugh doing it. Don't forget, your dad is in the safe haven of his church saying his prayers. You're in the trenches saying yours. Ask God to help you stop harm coming to you and your brothers here. Let's all just try and get out of here alive, shall we? And that, Sam, sadly, means killing when and what you can.
Aye.
We tread such a fine line, don't we? Death or survival, hell or heaven, right or wrong.
We do. And we're not the ones who've drawn it either.
Even when a gun is pointed into total oblivion and you can't guarantee that it was your own finger that had released the death bullet, the cries and screams still belong to you. There is a very easy turning point between fear and hatred, and not one of them able to delete the obscene images that are captured in their eyes and imagination. Pleading with a dead man to breathe again is the most harrowing thing to do, but it still gets done. Thank goodness for letters from home, a welcome sweetness that opened the door to better thoughts.
Poor Anna. She's written here that she's got another cold coming, she reckons.
Needs a bit of something rubbing on her chest when you get back, Corporal.
Thought I heard a funny noise last night. Enjoying yourself, were you, George? Rubbing your chest and that.
Bagger off.
Have you seen that bloody great rat that comes out at night?
Now, which one would that be exactly, Harry? This place is riddled with them.
It's enormous, Sam. You must have seen it. The really big one. Big Stan, I call him.
You've given a rat a name?
Yeah, George, why not? Reckon he knows it and all. He comes out when I call.
Bloody hell. He's named a rat and trained it.
He's all right, actually. Got a lot in common. We both drink filthy water. Both eat scabby food. We're both in this death hole trying to survive.
Yeah, but one big difference, though, Harry. His tail's twice the size of yours.
How far gone is Anna now, Corporal?
7 months. And Dad, I'll get to see them until after this latest stint, and then I'll be a dad, and a new beginning.
Corporal, we've heard nothing from Janice yet. I guess she's been busy with everything. It's not been easy, what with her dad being ill. She must have a lot on her mind. Yeah. I'm sure that's it. It's just that it slipped her mind.
Aye. Anna mentions that the village is struggling without us. Hey, she actually mentions you here. Tell Mickey they put an extra barrel behind the bar for him and his lucky Irish charm still hangs over the fireplace. It's far too quiet without him, and even Margaret Griffiths seems to have forgiven him.
You're joking. Where? Bloody hell.
What does she mean by that? What did you do?
No chance. That's between me and the little lady. And a gentleman should never betray a confidence, even if it is Margaret Griffiths. All I can say is I've never seen a girdle fit a bust that big ever in me life. Here, Corporal. Does she mention Janice at all? Is she well?
No. No, sorry, Mickey. Like you said, she's probably got a lot happening at the moment. Sorry.
I'll bet that Fred Chaplin's making out he's some kind of bloody hero. My Joan's keeping her eye on him, though. Slimy bugger. He'll lift any skirt he can. Here, Harry, you won't have anything left of your groin if you keep scratching like that.
Oh, the bloody itching is driving me mad. Christ!
Flea's having a good meal tonight, then.
I'm red raw with the bloody things.
Here, Harry, catch this.
Thanks, Corporal. What can I do with it?
It's a damp, cold cloth. Shove it down the trousers, it'll ease it.
Oh, tar. Oh, that's better. Corporal, think we're ever going to get out of here? All of us? Do you think that we'll ever get home again?
Aye, of course we'll survive. We'll be home again before you know it. Cheer up.
Yeah, you're right. I'm all right.
Oh, shit! Ah!
Oh, dear God! Stop it! Stop it! Oh,
holy shit, that hurts!
George, you all right?
Right, yeah, fine, I'll live. Good job Fritz is a lousy shot. I'll be all right.
Corporal, gather everyone round. We've noticed there's movement coming from the other side. So stay alert, everyone, and keep heads low. I also have some news to tell you. I received a further update report just minutes ago, and we've been called upon to take final positions tonight and advance at dawn. I'll give further updates as I get them. May I suggest that those of you who want to write home again, do so tonight. Oh, and Corporal, make sure there's an extra shot of rum with each drink.
Sarge.
Everyone knew the importance of that statement, the reality of those words. Some regurgitated their meaning over and over until the feeling of nausea subsided to make way for numbness. This was it then? Was this the moment that they had dreaded or longed for? A final resolution to a surreal existence, or a courageous defiance brought about by hope? This small nucleus of soldiers was about to be set free into a vast galaxy of the unknown. Mickey, Sam, George, Harry, Jim, and Sergeant Jeffers. Such a small bunch of souls fighting to make a difference. Jim, along with his fellow comrades, sat in silence, and once more, with pencil poised, began to write home to Anna. It was the first time his hand had ever trembled.
My dearest Anna, our instructions are to advance
in the morning. And take out the main German station on the east bank. We believe that extra support has been requested to assist us in our advancement and should be with us soon. Their arrival will be a welcome sight, but as yet we have received no further news. If everything goes to plan, I should be home within the week, and I feel a rising excitement with each thought of seeing you again. I hope you are managing to rest. I imagine carrying baby can be very tiring at times. It is such a comforting thought that in a few weeks our home will be filled with the joys of our baby, and it will mark a new beginning for all of us. I will keep this letter short, my love, and greet tomorrow with eagerness as it brings me one more day nearer to you. With my undying love, Jimmy.
Positions, everyone. Get on target. Watch him. Watch him.
Sarge, what the hell's that? What's Fritz doing out there? What's he on with?
Just keep an eye on him. He might be flicking a bloody white flag out there, but we just keep watching. Make sure he's on his own.
Now what's he doing?
Looks like he's planted something, I reckon.
Oh, Jesus, it's not a bloody bomb, is it, Sarge?
Well, I doubt it. He'd blow up his lot before us. No, I've not got the foggiest, but if I don't like it, we'll get him.
Sarge, he's putting a cross in the ground.
A what? What are Dickens for, mad bastard?
For his own bloody grave, I hope.
God knows.
Oh, God, yes. Someone tell me what date it is.
21st, I think. Why?
It's Good Friday. They must be celebrating Good Friday.
Makes a nice easy target, if you ask me.
I recognise what they're singing, Sarge. I have a cross. Could I?
No! It's too late for bloody prayers now, lad.
Sarge, yes, you're right. I used to think that nothing could shake my faith. I used to believe in a God of kindness and love. That if I prayed long and hard enough, I could be protected from anything. I could be forgiven from anything. I can't say I feel that way anymore. This war has gutted me like a goose at Christmas. I'm empty and cold with the smell of death surrounding me. I watch friends being dismembered. I hear their last gasps again and again, even in my sleep. My lungs swell with a stench of decay and blood. I feel living more than dying. I don't believe in a God of kindness anymore. I don't feel protected or safe. I feel wretched, vulnerable, pathetically weak. Lost soul, if I'm honest. But odd, you know, even though I can truly say I've lost my lifetime faith, somehow God won't let me go. Don't ask me what I believe in now. I don't know. I guess remembering that it's Good Friday brings an odd sort of comfort of remembering something familiar, something good from a far-off time, a fond memory.
It's memories, Sam, that keep us going. So keep that memory in your head.
What exactly would you pray for, Curtis?
I pray to keep us all safe, to give us strength and to ask for an end for all of this.
Well, that sounds like a good enough prayer for God to listen to. And we need all that bloody help we can get. Even from the Almighty. Go on, lad, be quick.
Here, Sam. I've got it for you. Say one for me, if you like.
Hold positions. Okay, go on, lad, go now.
Waving the white hanky in front of him, Sam felt very alone and exposed, but at the same time strangely liberated. There, in the middle of all this mutual hatred, human love was still managing to exist in the name of Christian faith. Once Sam had left the confines of the trench, the muddy ground made walking hard, but the German and his cross soon appeared in Sam's vision. Their silhouettes clearly cut from the moonlit sky. The German looked up, waved his white flag to acknowledge Sam, as if to say, "Come and join me. Come, be with me." In silence, the two soldiers met and simultaneously knelt beside the two crosses, offering their own individual prayers, but to the same God. Long after Sam and his fellow German Christian had returned to their respected ranks, the singing continued until it gently faded into a whisper, and then a final murmur. That's when the eerie silence engulfed the fields. It was as if everyone was just swallowing and breathing this last pure air into their lungs. If regret and anguish were ever to be measured, it could be found in abundance right there and then. Holding their positions with the cold metal of their guns stinging their fingers, they waited. They waited to be released to the unknown.
On my command, lads!
Gun upon gun spewed its guts out, and the ground physically shook underfoot. Thud after thud as each body fell, forced on by panic and fear, still they ran. Still they plunged forward. Until eventually there was nothing left to feel or hear anywhere. Sergeant Jeffers opened his eyes and wiped the sweat away from his forehead with his arm. His body seemed still to be vibrating, but pushing up from his elbows, he managed to slither against the barbed wire fence. As he let his eyes slowly search through the wall of bodies stacked around him, his own turned to stone. Never had he ever envisaged being one of the few to survive whilst the blood of his comrades ceased to flow. Through blurred vision, he let his mind absorb the horror of what was around him. He retched at the sight of pieces of flesh and bone embedded in the mud close by, and the overpowering smell of stale and fresh blood. Lying in this mass grave, it was the baritone sound of deep sobbing that sliced through Sergeant Jeffers' heart, causing him to connect back with the world. He was hearing someone alive. He thought he heard someone familiar, like a mother who can hear the voice of her own child amidst mayhem and chaos. His eyes searched further and scanned the butchered landscape to locate where the sound came from. There, close by. He focused with relief on the faces of Harry and Jim. Some of his lads were safe. Shredded, but safe. But this cold comfort was brief, for as his eyes adjusted, the fist of grief hit his stomach at the sight of the dead mound that Harry was cradling in his arms. It was Mickey.
Sarge! Sarge!
It's all right. I'm here. I've got you. You're going to be all right.
I'm hit, Sarge. Sarge. Sarge, I'm hit.
Shush. You'll be fine.
Harry's made it. Harry's made it too, Sarge. He's over there.
Harry. Harry, lad. Lay Mickey down and bring his trench coat over here for me. Come on, lad, now.
Mickey. Mickey. What's to become of us? Not you. Not you. I didn't want it to be you.
It's all right, Harry. It's all right, lad. I don't need it now. Jim's gone.
On that cold spring morning, Samuel Curtis, George Miller, Mickey O'Reilly, and Jim Savage lost their lives. They entered into spirit. There were many evenings when Anna would sit alone by the fireside and beckon Jim to return and be with her while she reread his letters.
It is such a comforting thought that in a few weeks our home will be filled with the joys of our baby and it will mark a new beginning for all of us. I will keep this letter short, my love, and greet tomorrow with eagerness as it brings me one more day nearer to you. With my undying love, Jimmy. Oh, are you here, Jim? Oh, my Jimmy. Jimmy 798483, Corporal Jim Savage. Oh, I know you're here. I can feel you. I can hear you, my love. Jim, when my time comes, will you be waiting in heaven for me?
Anna. I'm right here waiting. I've never left you.
angels are always with us. And whether or not you allow yourself to believe, loved ones are never far away. For every thought and memory that enters your head, your heart will hear. And it is within the heart where the angels receive messages and our loved ones live. They never leave you and never will.
Sergeant Jeffers was played by Chris Arnold, Corporal Jim Savage by Mike Bendel, Harry Ricketts by Gary Cadwallader, George Miller by Alex Cross, Samuel Curtis by Andrew Horsey, Mickey O'Reilly by John Robertson, Anna by Tracy Dean Powell, and the narrator was Phil Bendel. Flute played by Michaela Seddon and harmonica by Alex Cross. Phantom Love was written by Tracy Dean Powell and produced by Andrew Banfield.